back up. All right.
Okay, so we do have folks, and Janice needs to be promoted up to the panel.
Chief Gibson, good to see you.
All right, there you go, okay.
Good to see you.
All right, I think we've got everybody. I can't, yeah. All right, so it is 8:06 p.m. The Kensington Fire Protection District Board of Directors is returning from closed session, and we have no reportable action to report. So we will continue this combination of an adjourned and regular meeting. We did set a specific agenda item to occur at 8 p.m. because we are joined by Fire Marshal Gibson and Fire Prevention Officer Carrion. I'm not sure if they're both coming, but I do see that Fire Marshal David Gibson has joined us. So the agenda item is a public hearing. The action that the board is considering is to adopt Resolution 2019, confirming the report of the costs of abatement of public nuisance conditions, weeds and flammable materials, and authorizing related actions for Los Altos Drive South Lot and Los Altos Drive North Lot in Kensington, California. So I'm going to turn it over to Chief Pagoni, if that's okay with you. I think, is he back with us?
Yes.
I can't see the full, yes. Let me do the gallery view. There we go. Chief Pagoni, would you introduce the item and introduce Fire Marshal Gibson and take it from here?
Sure, I'd be happy to. So tonight, the fire department is before the board to hold the, basically for the purpose of having a public hearing to adopt the resolution that's before you. I haven't seen Captain Carrion yet, but Fire Marshal David Gibson is here, and he will, I believe he's prepared to go ahead and introduce the resolution and the findings on this.
Looks like Damien's there.
Yeah, we got him.
There he is. So, let's see, on fully yet?
He's muted.
Hey, let's see. There we go.
There we go. Good evening, Kensington Fire Board members, district staff, and members of the community. My name is Damien Carrion, your fire prevention officer. After the July 8th Kensington Fire Board meeting, a total of 24 properties were declared as public nuisances. We attempted to contact these properties via mail and giving them another 30 days to voluntarily comply. We also entered into several work plan agreements, giving property owners every opportunity to complete the work. Of those 24 properties, two of those were unable to complete the requirements of our fire hazard reduction guidelines. We then began the process of forced abatement. This consisted of scheduling and coordinating bids from various contractors. The properties were vacant lots that were located along the ridgeline in Kensington, which shares space with the East Bay Regional Parks and Wildcat Canyon. Before you have the list of properties, the two properties listed on Exhibit A with the following cost breakdown. Contractor costs of $2,450, administrative fees of $1,365, for a total cost of $3,815. I'm here to introduce a resolution confirming that the cost of these abatements, previously recognized as public nuisances by the Kensington Fire Board, allowing for the lien of the associated costs on their properties.
Can I ask you a question for a minute, Damien? Do these properties have a common ownership or no?
No, they're two separate property owners, two separate vacant lots.
Okay, thank you. I would be happy to move the adoption of Resolution 20-19, confirming the report of the cost of abatement of public nuisance conditions, weeds, inflammable materials, and authorizing related actions for the two lots on Los Altos Drive, designated the South Lot and the North Lot in that resolution.
Second.
All right, let's see if we have any board member comment. I have no comment. Kevin, in addition?
Not for me.
Okay, Don? You're muted, Don. Muted? There we go.
Okay, no.
No comment. All right, Janice?
I just wanted to thank Damian and Dave Gibson for doing such a good job on the fire prevention work this year, as always. Thank you. And I don't know if it's premature or not, Dave, but congratulations on your wedding.
Larry.
I'd also like to congratulate Dave and Damian on a job well done overall in terms of fuel reduction. I did have one question. Are these the only two lots in Kensington that we actually have to mitigate ourselves?
Yes, sir. Those were the only two that we went ahead and forced. All the other properties out of the original 77 did comply. The 24 that you guys declared a public nuisance on the July 8th meeting, those are the only two that we actually had to force abatement upon.
That's a fantastic compliance record, Damian. Congratulations. I know it was because you went back and bugged them several times.
Thank you very much.
Very hard job.
Well, and my only comment is also both to thank you, not only for your hard work, but for your patience and for the difficult situations that you often encounter. I've gotten a fair amount of email about folks who wish that you'd get out there and help them, you know, in their issues with their neighbors. And you do have to toe the line about what we as a fire department and fire district legally have a say in. And as Chief Pagoni has mentioned, neighbor disputes can sometimes be very difficult. And what I've observed is that you seem to go above and beyond the call of duty to do whatever you can, even when there's actually nothing that you can do. So I really do thank you for both your expertise as well as your soft skills and your patience with the community. So, I think I got your comment, Kevin.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Very welcome and much appreciated. So we have 13 members of the public on the line. And let's see if we have any public comment before we call the vote on the resolution.
I do not see any.
I do not either. So I will call the vote on Resolution 2019 as proposed by Director Kosel. I vote in favor. Kevin?
Yes, with thanks to Damian, thanks to David, and congratulations.
Don?
Yes.
Janice?
Aye.
Larry?
Yes.
Okay, the resolution is adopted 5-0. And thanks again to our fire department for its careful and hard work and vegetation management. So we now return to, it doesn't quite look like this on the agenda. I know a lot of people were confused by our September 30th meeting. We're still sort of on the September 9th meeting, part three. We adjourned the meeting on September 9th because we didn't finish it. We took it up again on September 30th, spent another 3 hours, didn't quite finish it. So now the old business items, 7.8.6, 7.8.2, 7.8.3, and 7.8.4. are the final items that the board needed to consider from our regular September 9th meeting. And I think the order of these items was at the request of Director Padian, and no one on the board objected. So we'll keep this order unless somebody objects now. I do have a public comment. Well, okay, let's start the first item. Before we do any voting, I've got a written public comment that basically spans all of these items, but I'll wait until we're going out to public comment on any first potential vote. So Kevin, I think it's on you to introduce item 7.8.6.
Thank you, Julie. The question about an emergency preparedness coordinator comes to the heart of what we are supposed to expect from the contract with El Cerrito Fire with respect to public education. At the Emergency Preparedness Committee 2 months ago, we determined that it would be appropriate for the general manager to speak to the fire chief to determine what it is that El Cerrito is obligated to Kensington for concerning specifics in the contract about public education. My personal feeling is that they do a lot, but we need more that they should not be doing, but that's only my opinion. And so I know that Mary has talked with Mike about this, and the best thing would be if they explained what El Cerrito is supposed to provide, what they have provided, and what they are able to do now and in future. Would that make sense?
I think so, if Chief Pagoni is willing, because I know that in my set of questions, I had some questions for him, but this would help maybe everybody.
Because they did have a conversation about it following the suggestion at the EPC meeting. And I think this is a very, very informative conversation. And so if they can recount it for all of us, it would be great. Then no one else would have to interpret it.
Okay, well, I will go first. And the first thing I would say is that I know with a letter that was sent to the board, as well as reading the material for this meeting, there's some misconceptions about what El Cerrito is providing and not providing. When I read this, it talks about the fact that we have stopped doing some of our public education due to the budget crisis. And it also does talk about the impact that the COVID-19 has had. To date, the only thing we have not done is the CERT classes, and that again, and yes, that was talked about not putting on the CERT classes because of the COVID-19, that there, you know, the last one that was supposed to start, I believe, the 1st of September, it was just, we were still too many restrictions to be able to do it. And quite honestly, we didn't get enough people to put the class on, that signed up. I think we had five or six people that were all that had signed up, let alone we had the restrictions there. As far as if we go into what the contract talks about, in being an emergency preparedness and being and public education, basically, I believe it goes into the fact that it talks about that we're going to provide to Kensington exactly what we provide in El Cerrito. That has been not only doing the CERT classes, doing the CPR classes. That also includes open house. That includes, and we did not do that this year, the Tri-City Safety Fair, which is the Tri-City being El Cerrito, Kensington, and Albany, even though we do get Richmond in there also, but it's always been those first three. Doing the school, we do school visits, and we also turn around and do the station visits, especially this month being Fire Prevention Month. Again, due to, a lot of schools aren't even in session or are not in the classrooms, but again, due to the COVID, and the fears that are out there of us, you know, being not only us being in the groups of kids, but also, you know, exposing our personnel to it. That has not been done. That is not due to the budget issue. That is strictly due to that. We are not eliminating a battalion chief position. We have a battalion chief that is retiring, and we are not going to fill that position right off the bat. Now, that may be tomato-tomato type of a distinction, but the clear distinction is if we eliminate it, it's totally gone. And if we don't fill it, it's going to be a vacant position. We are leaving it vacant right now for a couple of reasons. One, or main reason, is the rest of the other three battalion chiefs and myself are going to take over those duties. Nothing is going to be sacrificed because of the fact that we have a retirement of one of the people. Every single job that has been provided, from plan checks to inspections of construction sites, you know, as well as from the emergency preparedness, as soon as we can do classes, we will be doing classes. There's a mention about, I believe you touch on the fact about the CERT classes. I believe Chief Grappolo, again, up until the COVID wasn't kicked in, he has probably been one of the most active CERT people, both El Cerrito and Kensington, putting on classes and trying to organize people. CERT, there's one thing to keep in mind about CERT. It is a neighborhood program. It is a volunteer program. El Cerrito has always sponsored to do the training. Neither in Kensington nor in El Cerrito do we consider it that we run the program. You know, we coordinate, we do what we can. But basically it is needed. It is a program very much like Neighborhood Watch, very much like FireWise neighborhoods. It is designed to work with the area captains and to keep them involved. Quite honestly, even before the COVID kicked in, even with Chief Grappolo's enthusiastic work, as I believe is touched in this packet or information, there has not been as much involvement. That deals with the actual people that have taken the classes and, you know, basically, you know, either they no longer have an interest, maybe they have a health issue, whatever the reason being, we are not getting the participation of the public in these groups to be able to make some of this as viable as it should be. It's not from lack of trying. You know, we cannot force people to do this. It takes more than one person, although it does take, you know, at least one person full time to try and make something like this run, unless you have enough volunteers. Prime example is the La Merenda. They are totally run by a volunteer group over there. And I mean, they do wonderful work. You know, they're the ones, Board Member Cosell said earlier, has putting the drums and fire extinguishers on sale again. You know, they deal with all of that. You know, we have coordinated the pickup of the drums at the El Cerrito Community Center. But anyway, you know, the amount of work that's being put into all of these programs, nothing has diminished on it. You know, we are still out there doing every bit that we can do from the emergency coordination. I know a mention was made about the emergency operation plan. Emergency operation plan is still in a draft. It was provided to you, as it's been provided to department heads in El Cerrito to review and provide feedback. I believe I have, when we first started talking about this, I know more than once I've explained that in the event something bad happens, that basically the El Cerrito Kensington Fire Department is going to take care of whatever needs to be done, whether it's in Kensington or El Cerrito, because again, we treat Station 65 as just the third station of a three-station department. You know, different name on the engine, but there is not one item that we do different in Kensington that we do in El Cerrito, whether it be equipment on the engines, training, everything is handled in the same way with it. If there's more, you know, if there's more in the annex or more, you know, mention into the plan, you know, that's the feedback I need to this point, other than until I read this, I have not got that feedback. We have not adopted this as complete. It's what we call a 90% document. You know, so I am I do want that feedback. We will incorporate those things. There are some changes depending on what we do with the station because with the remodel, because one of the things that, you know, is planned on here is basically having the potential of, if not an emergency operations center, being able to open a DOC, a department operation center. Something smaller, something that maybe is just isolated in Kensington, it would still be us doing it, but we would have the location. We're going to have to rethink that plan unless something changes because of the fact, you know, due to the room or due to the space requirements, it appears that we will not have a full-size conference room with it. But, I mean, those are all changes that we're going to make. So I guess for the most part, what I'd have to ask or what I would put back to the board and to the public, is what has been provided that we have not provided, or that we provided in the past, what are we not providing now? Because I'll be very honest with you, until I've read this, nobody has come to me, nobody has said that, you know what, this needs to be done, that needs to be done. You know, we have taken on newer things. Last year we had not dealt with evacuations. We did start working on that. We did start, we have worked with KPD on this, as well as ECPD on the El Cerrito side. Again, we put together the whole wildfire preparation. It included Kensington, as it did El Cerrito. I can't really stress enough that we do anything different, from one side of the city limits to the other. And anything that deals with that preparation, or the emergency preparation, or anything to deal with the fire marshal, if you're seeing something diminished, someone has to, someone's got to let us know with it. We talk a lot. I mean, the city's talked about, dropping things, you're changing things up to be able to save money. That's saving money. That's not diminishing your services. We have to protect, because if we don't do that, I worry about the residents. I worry about the community. But I also worry about our firefighters. If we skip on anything, we do anything different, then we are putting, we're basically, from a safety standpoint, we're putting our personnel, potentially in harm's way, or, not giving them the full benefit of the services that we can provide for that. As far as some of the extra plans or the extra projects that the Emergency Preparation Committee is coming up with, those are over and above. And I think, Kevin, that you mentioned that, there's other things that the district wants to do. And I think that's great, and we will do what we can. But, we have to understand that, there's that balance of, what's included, what we do with the through the contract, and, what is something that is basically over and above that you want in Kensington with it, if you're looking at an emergency, if it's something, the direction that the district board wants to go to, I would fully support it, and we would work, you know, we would work with the person that you get, you know, on any of the plans that they have. You know, that, I mean, that's, you know, the more that can be put at it, you know, it can be put there, the better for it, you know, for, you know, for the public, for the district. So I don't know. That's a long answer, I guess.
I don't think you could have said that any better, Michael, honestly. That, I mean, it's wonderful you said that, because I agree with you. I think personally that what the contract says about education and whatever is very vague. There's nothing specified. There's no hours, there's no personnel, there's no budget, there's no requirements, there's no number of people to reach, there's no benchmarks, there's no way to evaluate whether El Cerrito is doing its part for Kansas in terms of education. But all the things that you mentioned, you know, the CERT training, everything else, the days when people can go down and just like learn how to operate fire extinguishers and, you know, learn about two-way radios and like these are all amazing things, and it's shared. And yes, okay, when there's training, people do have to pay for it, but everybody has to pay for it. I don't think you can be doing any more, because there's nothing specified, as far as I can tell, in the contract. If it is, you know, somebody can come up with it. But so the thing is that, and I think you're right, because I know that you and Mary had a conversation that, you know, that if we wanted more, you could arrange more, but we'd have to pay for it. Well, okay, but you just said, you know, you'd be able to support that if we took more on ourselves. Here's the reason why I think this is important. And the reason is that actually Kensington is not like El Cerrito in any way at all. It's a very different animal. The streets are more narrow. We have a greater vegetation load. We have bigger and tighter houses. Our parking is crazy. We have too many people in vegetation and vehicles. And we don't have planned evacuation routes. We are really behind the curve. And as I pointed out last time, you know, of the 1% of districts in California, like zip codes, more dangerous or as dangerous as Paradise, we are one of 10 in Northern California and the only one recognized in the Bay Area. We are really, really dangerous. And, you know, and Larry knows, and I know, and, you know, our police people, like, this scares the hell out of us, or it should. And I don't think that El Cerrito should be responsible for Kensington's problems in that regard. Kensington has to take care of itself. And it's, you're absolutely right. It's not your fault that we only have 15 to 20 Kensington residents per year taking CERT classes. We need to raise awareness. We need to raise awareness about neighborhood watch, neighborhood availability, like helping other people get out, people with disabilities, all this other things. And this has been, I think, something that no one could blame El Cerrito or a fire department for doing anything less than their very best. But what we need, and we're becoming to realize it because of our current, in the past 4 years, climate crisis, we need more and we need it fast. And we can't ask El Cerrito for it because it's not in the contract and you haven't got the money. I think we all agree on this. I mean, we get this.
Can we give other folks a moment to see if we are?
Excuse me, I can't hear Julie.
Oh, I just asked if we could, because we've got, as usual, a long set of agenda items ahead of us. So I would like to, if you don't mind, you said you think we all agree, let's give everybody on the board a chance to have their say. Somebody may make a motion, we don't know, but I'm just gonna go in the usual order and give the board members a chance to comment or ask questions, starting with you, Don.
With me. I think this is a what clarifies a lot of sort of questions that I think we've had. And certainly I think El Cerrito has been very generous. And so, you know, they're making some corrections now, but it looks like we are coming a long way to do this for ourselves. And so I'm inclined to probably I'm a little iffy here, to vote for this, although it sounds like there is we have to hire someone, and that part is yet to, you know, I don't know that the scope is, well, the scope is there a little bit. Okay, that's me.
Thank you, Don. Janice.
I have two concerns with this. One, we're on the verge of hiring a permanent general manager, and I would like their input on this, rather than presenting this as a kind of fait accompli before they're even in position. That bothers me. I want to know what they prefer to do and what they prefer to contract out. So I'm not prepared to vote favorably on this tonight. And apart from the timing issue, I'm concerned that there's no price tag on this. And I think we have so many demands for our funds. I mean, last month when we took a look at what it would cost to renovate the public safety building, I don't know that how much money we have left for this. So I would like a price tag on this rather than an open-ended proposal.
Thank you, Janice. Larry, you're next alphabetically.
Yes. Well, if you look at surrounding communities, for example, Berkeley has, now it's a much bigger fire department. I understand that. It's probably also a much bigger risk, but they have three or four full-time people working on emergency preparedness, including a battalion chief. Other towns likewise have a lot of effort in emergency preparedness. I think we definitely need to go there. We have a lot of challenges that, as Kevin says, maybe El Cerrito doesn't have. We'd like to set up FireWise communities. I don't think El Cerrito will be doing that. We need to come up. We need to come up with evacuation plans and evacuation awareness. And we are doing that, but we're very short staffed. And having somebody from the fire district also working on that, I think would be a reasonable thing. Now, it's probably too late for this fire season, because by the time we get somebody on board, the fire season will be over. And I definitely agree that if you're hiring a new general manager, you should let the general manager pick his or her team, rather than staffing up and then bringing in a general manager. It just works better that way. So I definitely can see merit in putting this off, postponing the actual hiring decision until January. I think it's very important that we have this discussion now and that we continue having this discussion, because this is something that somebody has to do, and we just don't have the volunteers in Kensington to do it. It has to be somebody who actually gets paid, and it's their job. I've worked as a area coordinator in CERT for 8 years, and I've seen the CERT effort in Kensington pretty much fade away at a time when we really don't need it to fade away. We really need these people. So, and the way you do that is just like the police and the fire are doing with evacuation. You go door to door, you arrange citizen meetings. You tell them what the problem is. As Kevin said, we're the number one zip code in the Bay Area in terms of being incinerated. People don't know that, or they don't want to recognize that. So we need somebody, a public information officer, a part-time coordinator, whatever you want to call them. We need somebody in that job, and we definitely will need somebody in that job within a year, for sure, in my opinion. Do we need to hire him tonight? No, I don't think we do. I think there's more planning that needs to be done. But we need to think about it. We need to talk about it. And we need to get public input on this as well, because I'm sure the public has lots of input on this topic. Thank you.
Thanks, Larry. Kevin, did you have anything else? You're next alphabetically, and then there's me.
Well, actually, Julie, thank you, but we didn't put any proposal forward about this. You went to comments from other people before we actually talked about what we were proposing.
Well, I did. I was soliciting comments, and I meant to say that if someone wanted to make a motion, they could do it. The floor is yours.
I don't agree with Janice that you wait for a general manager to hire someone. A general manager, by the very job description that we put out, is not expected to have content expertise in public safety or emergency preparedness. And the proposal, as we are suggesting it, is that this position would report to the board through the general manager, but the general manager would not have the content knowledge necessarily to set the goals and objectives at that position. This would be done by people with content expertise recommended to the board for the board's decision. And so I do not think, number one, that we have to wait to hire somebody else as general manager to do those jobs. And second, I don't know if anyone has noticed, but we're in the middle of a Diablo Wind event. And we've encountered more than one already, and we're probably going to encounter more. And as Larry pointed out when we were talking the other day, this is going to be a very dry winter. If anyone thinks that this fire season is going to be over in the next 2 weeks, I don't think anyone would want to bet the ranch on that. So I want to also point out that in response to the letter that was sent to the board today, which I think was misinformed in many respects, this position that we are suggesting, and this description following discussion in the Emergency Preparedness Committee last month, it was delegated to me and David Spath and Lisa Corona to update and rewrite, which we did. So I want to point out, in contradistinction to our correspondent of today, that this is not about training CERT people. That is what El Cerrito does for us. That's in the contract, and we do it. And people should look at this before they make charges. What we need to do is to get neighborhood awareness, get neighborhood togetherness together. If you look on page 19, there are three major goals of what we expect this position to do. No one from El Cerrito can do those things. I mean, I think the chief has articulated this. We completely agree. But we are in a very difficult position. We need to educate people really quickly. And we have to do the best we can. We have to put things on our website. We cannot expect our general manager to do that. But obviously the person that we propose hiring would report to the general manager, and everything would be vetted through the general manager before being posted. This is how we do things responsibly as a district. And it's very clear that some of the things that our correspondent, other people wanted, such as house hardening and vegetation removal, that would be great, but those are long-term goals. They are not things you can mandate and get a lot of buy-in overnight, but we can do the best we can. This proposal, I think people should read it and think about what happens if we don't do this. Because who will educate people if we don't do this?
I don't like to interrupt people, and I could probably be accused of not interrupting people enough, but after your first set of remarks, I set the timer at 20 minutes, and we've now got 8 minutes and 40 seconds left for the item, which is, I think, more than we need. I mean, more than we should even be taking. But you had implied that you were going to actually make a proposal, which is why I went back to you. Do you intend to make a proposal, or should I go to my comment? Where are we with you on that?
You can make, Julie, honestly, but we have an action item on page 18.
I would be
happy to move that.
Could you read it? Could you please make a motion? We'll see if we have a second. That will inform the rest of our discussion on this item.
That the district hire a part-time emergency preparation coordinator to work with the community and with emergency preparedness representatives inside and outside Kensington to take necessary steps to improve the safety of our citizens. This position is a district hire reporting to the GM. Details and suggested duties of the position follow. Administrative language should be regarded only as suggestion.
All right, that's your idea. Sorry. Okay, do I have
a matter with your microphone or something?
Yeah,
I'm not. You come across garbled occasionally. I'm not sure what's happening.
How am I doing now? Maybe I need
you're
to.
You're fine now. You're just
that's
fine.
Better.
Something happened. Sorry about that. I don't know what I did, but all right. Do I have a second for Kevin's motion? All right. I think the motion fails. I would like to just make a couple comments, and I think we should take some public comment. I had written down just 5 to 6 things. The first thing I just wanted to say is kind of a general comment that pertains to this report in the agenda packet, but I see it in other reports. I think we need to know who is the author of these reports, because we have quite a few item reports here who we don't know who wrote them, but they do quite liberally use the we believe and we think and we need, but we don't know who we is because we don't know who wrote this. And I think as a board, we have to remember that the public reads our agenda packets and they don't know either. So they draw conclusions from what they read. And so if it's more of an opinion piece, I think rather than just sort of a here's the facts and figures, I think that needs to be clearly stated in order to not give the wrong impression to the public. My second comment is I was happy to see that this job description had changed since the last, even though it wasn't supposed to, because this is the resumption of our last meeting. The last time I saw this, it said it reported through the Emergency Preparedness Committee to the general manager, and I firmly believe that if we hire this position, it should report to the general manager. I've gone to the Moraga Fire District website, and I do note that they have a position like this that reports directly to the fire chief. I do understand that the fire chief is also the district manager for that district. And so probably it would either report to the fire chief or to our general manager.
Or both.
Exactly. I think reporting to having that input from the fire chief, maybe a dotted line, is really critical. I do tend to agree, but I could be persuaded about getting the general manager on board first. And related to that, at the last Emergency Preparedness Committee meeting, I noted that some on the committee brought up the idea that maybe this should just start first with a consultant to just kind of test the waters and see how it goes before considering hiring an employee, which is always a kind of a more entangled relationship. And also, I think a position like this would qualify for a consulting role because it is so narrow. And then finally, Chief Bagoni, I just had a question for you in response to your comments. And maybe it's not related to this, but you did mention about your concern about losing the full-size conference room. because you had hoped to have that equipped. I think you were responding to the staff report or the report and the comments about the emergency operations plan. And you made a comment about your hope to equip that room, a full-size room, as a DOC. And I was just wondering, is our present full-size conference room actually equipped as a DOC?
It has the capabilities as far as the networking. Since the change with Brenda, but no, we still have our network in there, just not hooked up to the Kensington computer. So,
sorry, you blanked out, at least for me.
Oh,
maybe it's my problem here.
Anyway, yes, it is set up as far as technical capabilities there. It's a lot easier since that building was redone and that conference room was done, because so many more things now can be done on the web. So many things live in the cloud, so to speak. The main thing is having the room, having, a central location, you know, with a table, being able, well, that has the one television and it also serves as a monitor. But, you know, being able to display things on the wall as far as status check or status boards and, so yes, short answer, yes, it is set up.
Okay. Thank you. So we do have some hands raised among our 13 attendees, but I mentioned that I received a public comment on September 20, well, we at the public comment address, received a public comment September 29th, 1:40 p.m., and it does touch on this topic as well as topics to come. So I'll read it very quickly. This comment is from Mr. Garen Corbett, who is a Kensington resident. He says, "Dear directors, I wish to add my voice of support for various steps being considered by the board to better prepare Kensington for natural disasters and other emergencies. I believe the broader and holistic view of public safety and preparedness being considered in recent years is a positive development that will ensure better public safety and community resilience. In particular, creative initiatives being undertaken, like the Community Committee, a pilot program for emergency radios, public path access and improvements, and the potential acquisition and installation of public safety announcement systems are excellent. In particular, a couple of these could help rectify failures to notify residents of urgent evacuation orders that we have seen in recent years in the North Bay and other parts of the state. I also believe these and other important activities may be sped up and enhanced with the investment in a part-time emergency preparedness coordinator. I am heartened to see our community make some critical and creative preparations for an increasingly dire and frequent set of natural disaster risks. Thank you for the hard work and public service. With appreciation, Garen." And now we have three hands raised.
Julie, was this written to all directors? It sounded like you said all directors, Julie.
I read it exactly as it was written, Kevin, and we have a protocol, if you read our agenda, that the public can send public comment to the public comment email address, public.comment@kensingtonfire.org. And the protocol we set up is that if those comments are sent in before a meeting, we agreed that we'd read those comments at the meeting. So when this comment came in, I responded to Mr. Corbett and told him that when the relevant agenda items came up, I would read his comment at the meeting.
Okay, so if they aren't addressed to all directors, you don't send them to all directors, you just read it at the meeting.
I'm just explaining my understanding of the current protocol for that email address. It's the same protocol I followed when I read Vita Doro's comment at the beginning of the meeting. If the board would like to change it or adopt something formal, let's put that on the agenda. No ill intent on my part.
Well, I would just say I would appreciate getting a copy of correspondence to the board, to the directors ahead of the meeting, so that I can put some thought into it rather than just have it arrive and have it read at the meeting.
Well, the point is, we're doing this like El Cerrito does it in response to COVID. This is meant to be public comment that's actually read at the meeting. This is different than someone just sending an email and writing to the directors. But honestly, we're so out of time. Let's put it on the agenda if folks want to, if we want to do something different. I have nothing invested in this personally. So we have three hands up. I'm going to go in the order in which I think they were raised. I know that Eileen Natoli has had her hand up since almost the beginning. So Mary, why don't you let her go forward?
All right, I think I have unmuted you, Eileen.
Or maybe not.
Well, I tried.
Oh, it still shows as muted. I wonder if you guys are toggling with each other.
Oh, maybe. There. Okay.
All right. I just wanted to say that I hadn't been informed that the CERT class was going to restart. So in response to Chief Pagoni's comment that there were very few people signed up in September, I had started taking the 40-hour CERT class last winter, and it was canceled because of COVID. Partway through it. So I assumed that I would be notified if it had been restarted. So there might have only been five or six people that were notified of restarting, but if it is, and I sent an email to Brenda, I would like to know, because I would like to resume that class. That's all I wanted to mention.
Thank you very much for your comment. If there's anything that Chief Pagoni would like to add on, perhaps he can do that during his report. There's a couple other things. I think the next hand up was Gail Feldman.
Yeah.
But she's still muted. Now she's okay. Good.
I'm good. Hi. So I just want to respond. I also sent a letter to your board today. Many of you have seen it. I did not realize you had this other portal for submitting comment, but that's okay. I'm not going to reread my letter. If you've seen it, I hope you have. But just, I want to just address a couple comments Kevin directed, I believe, at me during his comments, and then just to go further in what I wrote to you earlier, which is, I read the report that's in your packet. So that's what I was basing any comments I made today in regards to what this position might do. I was concerned that the city of El Cerrito had obligations under the contract, which has now been explained by Chief Pagoni, specifically what they provide is public education for emergency preparedness. I think that fits with what my understanding has been over the years of what they do. The agenda item in your packet, specifically number one, responsibilities, duties, is CERT. So it didn't make any sense to me that you would hire a position where the city of El Cerrito is already providing that service. So that was one comment I had. But I think in general, looking at what you've written, it's not that I disagree that we need to maybe look at how we are looking at our emergency preparedness. I don't necessarily agree it needs to be a public position. I think you first really need to look at what are you trying to accomplish. Saying we want education is all great, but what is it that we want? And to say, well, things are long-term, like house hardening, home hardening, which is exactly what the insurance commissioner told us is gonna need to happen if you wanna keep your home insurance, your fire insurance, just doesn't make sense to me to say that's a long-term goal. We just need education. We have plenty of education. We have a very educated community. People understand what's going on in this community, but we need some very specific things done. So I think that while this conversation is okay to have, I just don't think this is a proposal that's really ready to go anywhere. Plus, the whole point that I believe some of your board members made about the cost not being included, how can you make a decision about anything without knowing what the cost is going to be? You know, the money doesn't grow on trees, and you guys are about to build an $8 million building or more. And where is all this money coming from? So I'm glad that at least, you know, I'm hearing from Julie and Janice and Larry that you're not ready to move this forward quite yet, and that it should go to the general manager that you're about to hire to consider what might be the kinds of things you'd be looking for and how you might achieve it. But you need to do a lot more work on this, and I just, that's my main comment. It's just not ready for decision making.
I'd like to respond to that in two respects. In the first place, this is not CERT training. It's rebuilding of the area neighborhood coordination programs by getting people together. It's a grassroots effort, number one. Number two, it is not appropriate for a committee to talk about salary. That's what the GM does. Julie has stressed, and we all agree, that we have to separate administrative and programmatic functions. And finally, Gail, if you think that someone else is going to do this education in the community, I'd like you to identify them, because frankly, you haven't, and none of our other four board members have done this either. And I just want people to know that in not even considering moving this forward for even further thought, this board has essentially abrogated its responsibility to educate the community and go back to the mission statement. The mission statement on the website, everything is covered by the El Cerrito contract except these elements of education. And this board tonight has just abrogated those.
This meeting, and I have no controls. All right, I'm gonna say something. I want our board to be aware that under the Sturgis Code, we have a motion available to us to limit debate, and that is to move that each speaker be limited to a certain number of minutes, and that would apply to all of us. And we would vote on it, and it would take a 2/3 vote. It's just 4 out of 5. But we're trying to maintain order here, and Kevin, I think you've gotten more than your fair share of opportunity to comment on this item. And furthermore, you're just entirely out of order responding to public comment when everyone else is restraining themselves. So if no one else does it, I'm gonna make a motion to limit debate, because if each one of your items keeps going like this, we're gonna have to have a part 4 of the September 9th meeting.
I'll second your motion, Julie.
Pardon me, Jen?
I will second your motion.
All right, having said that, let's hope we can avoid it. We've got one more public comment, hand raised, David Spath, and I really wanna ask the board, please don't respond, just listen to the comment. So Mayor, oh yeah, Dave, you look like you're unmuted.
Yeah. Dave?
We can't hear you, David.
He's unmuted.
Dave, I'm not, but not again.
Dave?
There's some toggling going on. There we, now don't touch anything, just talk.
Okay, he should be fine.
And he looks unmuted.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know what's happening, Dave. So I think that-
Oh, he dropped.
He just disappeared.
You know-
Have a bad connection.
Let's move on to the next agenda item. There are no further hands raised, and we'll give Dave the opportunity, even in the next agenda item, if he gets his connection back, he can say what he wanted to say, because he did have his hand up for a long time.
Julie, I would like to make one comment, if I may, in conclusion. The motion was to hire a emergency preparation coordinator. It was and that was the motion that didn't get a second. I don't think we should assume that means that nobody is interested in talking about it. I'm very interested in talking about it. I don't think at this point that we're ready to go out and hire somebody.
I agree, Larry.
Yeah, I thought that your comments were very clear on that, Larry. And So no problem there. But folks, long night ahead, okay? 7.8.2, recommendation to ask the board to request the El Cerrito Fire Department and the El Cerrito Police Department to use Nixle and Nextdoor to, number one, notify the public of red flag days, and number two, notify the public in advance of the first warning of impending Diablo wind events. There is apparently an action associated with this. I do not see any report in the packet. I do not know whose item this is. I assume it's Kevin's. So, staff
asked Chief Pagoni if this is not already being done, and then we could move on.
Because I thought it's already being done.
Yes, it is. And matter of fact, right now we are in a red flag and a Diablo wind event going together. Typically, if we have the Diablo wind event, it's normally there's normally going to be a red flag associated with it, But the Kensington Nixle's got it, the website's got the red flag, as well as the El Cerrito PD put it out. We have it on our Facebook, and you all got a picture of it earlier. The brand new sign in front of Station 65 has the red flag sign on it also.
Thank you. All right.
So I would like to point out that this item was submitted to the board in late June, at which time we had no knowledge of the things that the chief has just said. Kensington Fire has only recently started up Nixle warnings. This is great. It's really important that we do this. The problem has only recently been solved, and that's terrific. And thank you, Chief, for working to find the proper place for the fire danger sign. Thank you, Mary, for getting it put up. It's something that we worked on at the suggestion of a resident very thoroughly, being more than a year ago. It's great to see now it's finally up.
All right. So this is Kevin's item. I don't know. I'm just going to go straight to ask, does anyone on the board want to make a motion on this item? Does anyone on the board want to make a further comment on this item? All right. We've got 13 people from the public. Does anyone from the public want to make a comment? I see none. So let's move on. 7.8.3, status of a proposal for a pilot program to provide emergency radios to members of the public, listed as discussion/action, but I also, unless I'm missing it, do not see a supporting document in the packet. So whoever owns this item, speak up, please, and introduce it to the board.
Again, this comes out of the Emergency Preparedness Committee. The recommendation from the committee has been to try to negotiate to figure out how we can provide low-cost radios that will warn people in the event of emergency. It's very important to understand, and this comes also in conjunction with the next item, that if there is...
Do you have a proposal for the board tonight on this item?
Yes. I propose that the board encourage further investigation of providing emergency radios to people in need in Kensington. That need would be determined by financial and medical considerations.
Do I have a second for
that? Is that a motion, Kevin?
I think a proposal and a motion are considered to be the same thing in the Sturgis Code.
In that case, I will second Kevin's proposal and motion.
All right, that means we need to discuss it. Don?
You know, this came up quite a while ago. And the problem with it is that we're not going to tell you how to invent your whatever it is you want to do with the radios. But we do, we told you to come back when you know how to finance it. And it's the same old thing. You're not addressing the problem.
Thank you, Don. Janice.
Well, I'm concerned that there's no price tag with this again also. And I think when we discussed this a long time ago, I think more than a year ago, I suggested that you work with La Mirinda CERT, who's providing the water drums and the fire extinguishers at cost, and that perhaps they could do the same with radios. And I think the cost is $30 to $50 a piece. So I would prefer that they be provided at cost through La Mirinda CERT.
Thank you, Janice. Larry.
Well, this has been discussed at several different emergency preparation committee meetings going way back. I think one of the stumbling blocks, as it were, was who collects the money and how much money should be collected and this what. I think what's really at issue here is that if there are people in Kensington, and I'm assured that there are people in Kensington who cannot afford to buy this radio, that we should buy one for them. And I think that's a good idea. I doubt seriously there's that many people in Kensington that can't afford a $30 radio or a $50 radio. And so the price would be moderate indeed. We do have to work out a few minor details, like exactly what does it mean to not be able to afford a $50 radio? Do we have to require 20 years of tax returns or what? But I think we're just trying to make sure that everybody in Kensington has multiple ways of being alerted if there's a fire. And how can we do that as a volunteer organization is part of the fire district? And one of the ways was, okay, if they can't afford a radio, fine, they probably already have two of them. If they can't afford a radio, we should buy one for them. And if you think there's 100 people in Kensington that they can't afford a radios, that turns out to be like $5,000, which is a pretty moderate sum of money. And it's important that these people have this.
Larry, the county tells us that 95% of our people here in Kensington are signed up with the county warning system.
And
so if we've got 95% signed up with the county, what more are we getting with the radio?
It's just, it's an alternative form, Janice. There's county warning system, it's reported that it doesn't always work. And let's face it, no human design system always works. So if you have more than one alerting system, and we do, we have Nixle, we have the community warning system, we have this radio, which you can set to the NOAA channel and have it actually go off and buzz in your ear when there's a red flag or when there's a fire alert. And perhaps we need more warning systems. I don't know, but This was my take on what we need. Kevin, I think, did I cover that?
I'll let Julie comment, please.
Okay, I have a few comments just to reiterate some of what's been said and then to just add a little bit more. So one thing is that I've been kind of watching this proposal that's been coming before us multiple times since the summer of 2019. And we keep giving feedback, and our feedback doesn't resonate, it appears. The last time we looked at it, I believe Janice is correct, was earlier in 2020. Because we were actually told that the committee thought about it, and they thought that there was no plausible way to determine financial need. I do note that the district has a smoke detector program. I believe it's for a program for senior citizens and those with financial need. Although I haven't been able to find it on the website. So it would be nice if we get that a bit more visible, because we, in looking at that, might be able to determine what is the district already put in place to gauge financial need or senior citizen status. Secondly, Janice and I both said the last time this came before us, we asked for the committee to, as Janice said, go to La Mirinda and see if we could resell these radios through their program, which works quite well for Kensington residents. Thirdly, I suggested, I remember the weekend I did it was the blessing of the pets thing in 2019, how about the Ace Hardware Store? I approached the owner of the Ace Hardware Store and he said he would welcome not only taking our advice on radios, but putting together a whole turnout for emergency preparedness supplies all in one place.
Oh, wow.
I listened to the last Emergency Preparedness Committee meeting a couple of weeks ago, and I heard a member of the Emergency Preparedness Committee suggest getting the Ace Hardware Store on board, give them a list, this radio, other things. Their list of emergency preparedness supplies is useful but primitive in this rather advanced society. I mean, they have the gas, water heater, shutoff wrenches, and a few things like that, but we could help them out and they could put out what do you call those signs, you know, where they tell Kensington residents, come on in for your emergency preparedness supply. They could have
a parking lot sale and make it a special event. Yeah.
Well, there you go. So I guess I'm just feeling frustration about this item. That it continues to kind of come back with the lack of definition, and that the guidance that the board keeps giving doesn't seem to really be taken into account and acted on. So that might not be what the Emergency Preparedness Committee wanted to hear, but that's kind of where I've been on this. So we have 13 folks still on the line.
Could I say something about this?
If you keep it brief, because you have already commented, but please keep it brief.
I find it frustrating that emergency preparedness, which is the most important thing we can do right now, has to be parsed into 20-minute segments when no discussion on any previous board topic has ever been treated that way. We have to save the lives of 5,000 people, potentially. I mean, let's please get our priorities straight. To begin with, Dawn asks how to finance this. And it's actually a pretty easy way.
Timer is not on. We are counting on the collegiality and the cooperation of board members to try to get through these items. I don't think we want September 9th, part 4, to come back to us.
Well, it would have been July, but these things have been postponed, and they are actually...
Every time they come back to us, they're different. So it's actually not that any item was...
I'll tell you why they're different. They're different because
you haven't responded. You haven't made me the host, because I would mute Kevin right now. And I am the chair of the meeting. So I'm going to take public comment. I'm sorry, Kevin, but I think I'm going to have to make this motion to limit debate, because we know we won't be here all night because everybody's cutting the cord at 10 these days. But what we do know is we're not going to finish some very important items on our agenda. So I'm going to the public. There is one hand of 13 folks raised. It's raised by Paul and Vita Doro together, so I'm not sure which one of them it will be. But please go ahead. It doesn't look like you're muted, so please go ahead.
I don't even see him.
I see the hand raised.
I can hear something, but not very loud.
I also don't see the microphone icon for them. Oh, now they seem.
Can you hear me now?
One more try.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for unmuting me. Why don't you just put a dollar cap on this and try it out? We've spent an awful lot of time on this. There's a lot of precedent for this district to do it that way. You've done it for removing juniper. You've done it for a number of other things. So put some dollar cap on it so that people can, if they think they need it, get an emergency radio. Thank you.
Thank you. And just to clarify for the members of the public, the district does not pay for each individual juniper removal. We give a matching grant to Diablo Fire Safe Council, and they handle the administration. And I would be more than open to considering a grant for some of these programs for some other entity to handle it, but that hasn't been presented to us. So this is apples and oranges. All right. We have another hand up, which is Kate. So let's see if we can allow Kate to talk. I think I just muted her. It's this toggle thing. I think you're good to go, Kate.
Julie, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Yeah, I wanted to speak to the radio item. My main concern is getting these emergency radios into the hands of our most vulnerable population. Okay? There are people in Kensington that when they go to bed at night, if they have a cell phone, it's in another room charging, okay? Or they take their hearing aid out, all right? So they're not going to hear the phone ring. These emergency radios turn themselves on in the case of an emergency. They come on very loud. They also have lights that flash. So that's, you know, everybody's going to notice this. And as far as costs, I think it would be very difficult to ask people to prove that they, poverty. I mean, we're not trying to make anybody in our town feel less than or to embarrass them in any way. But there are elderly people and disabled people here who easily have $600-$800 a month copay on their prescriptions. This puts them in a very, very difficult spot. I think these radios are very important to them. And I think it's not charity, by the way, to give them a radio. They've been paying taxes here for a long time. This would be a very small dividend coming back to them. I hope that you'll keep that take that into consideration. Thanks.
Thank you for your comment, Katie. And I think that if your hand gets lowered, I think that we're finished with public comment. So we do have a motion on the table. And that was a motion by Kevin, seconded by Larry. So I'm going to call for the vote. I vote no on the motion. Kevin?
Yes.
Don?
No, it just is waiting to have you guys do something and finish it up. This is tired of it.
Janice?
I vote no.
Larry?
I vote yes.
All right, motion fails 2-3. So we now move on, and I'm going to make a motion to limit debate to 3 minutes per board member and 3 minutes per member of the public.
Your motion.
All right. Let's see. So just a reminder that this calls for it. The motion is debatable, and calls for a two-thirds majority, which in our case is 4. So I'm going to go around and call for comment on my motion. Don?
No comment.
Let's see. Janice, you're next.
I have no comment.
Larry?
No comment.
Kevin?
You're muted, Kevin.
Motion.
The motion has not been presented, has it? It's just listed there.
I just presented a motion to limit comments from board members and members of the public to 3 minutes each using a timer, and Janice seconded it.
Does that include the presentation of the motion?
All comments.
Including presentation. So you want a motion to be explained in 3 minutes or less, and then everyone votes on it.
The motion can be explained in 3 minutes. We can do one round of comments, 3 minutes each. Janice, would you still second that?
Yes.
Do you have a comment, Kevin?
Are you asking me to comment or to say yes or no on the motion?
I haven't called the vote yet. I'm going for board member comment, then I will go for public comment, then I will call the vote.
I think it's insane.
I know, you've called me that before, so I'm getting you. Okay, it's an insane motion. Nevertheless, I have no comment because I made the motion and I stand by it, because I think we're just not going to get our work done without some kind of constraints on our behavior. And so we have 13 people on the line. I don't see any hands raised. All right.
I have a question.
Yeah, well, I was just about to do that, Janice. Roll call vote. I am in favor. Kevin, you're muted.
Against.
Don.
No.
You vote against the motion.
Yes.
Okay, you don't want to limit comment to 3 minutes. Just want to make sure I understand your vote.
I'm voting no.
Okay. So it basically, I think, dies because we needed four, but let's get the votes. Janice?
I vote yes.
Larry?
I vote no.
Okay, we'll be here back in November for the rest of this meeting, I guess. Alrighty. So now we move on to 7.8.4, status and future steps for investigating the acquisition and installment of emergency public address systems for Kensington. And I, again, am not finding any supporting material in the agenda packet, and I don't know whose item this is. So whoever it is, please speak up and introduce your item.
All these were introduced by the Emergency Preparedness Committee, all of these items.
I'm just asking because it doesn't say.
That's correct. But when it was submitted to Mary, it was all submitted from the EPC, and that was months ago. Sorry if that got lost somewhere in transit. So let us talk about what happens.
I just want to clarify that this was first submitted on September 9th, and this is part three of September 9th.
It was submitted in late June. So.
Please go ahead, and please be considerate of everyone's time.
I will be considerate of everyone's health and safety.
Please go ahead.
In an extended power outage, such as a PG&E planned shutoff, it's important for people to understand how they will be alerted in case of emergency. This should be hitting us especially hard this week. Last year, power was cut off to much of Marin County for more than a week. Even though they were not directly threatened by fire, they were just part of an extended power grid that PG&E was afraid would start a fire based on their equipment. Up in Sonoma, near my house, the same thing happened last week. Now, if your power goes off for more than about 4 days, likely your cell phones and laptops will be defunct, and so will your router. Most cell phone towers have power for only 24 to 72 hours, if that. A few can have their power replenished, but in Marin it was estimated that some 80% of them in some areas were useless. Last year, you could go down to a cafe in the flats and recharge, maybe to a friend's house in the flats where they had electricity, but maybe not so much during the pandemic. A good option is portable charger power banks, but they can also run out with extended use. And besides, how many people have them?
If you still have an old hardwired tabletop princess phone with a corded handset, it can receive reverse 911 calls to alert you to an emergency, such as a fire in the middle of the night in Tilden Park. But during the campfire in 2017, as few as 17% of residents and seldom more than 40% received those calls, even if they had those phones. Others will not be called at all, or at least they will not hear it because there will be no power. Where are you on this spectrum? The proposal here is that the fire district should invest in public emergency address systems, powerful speakers that can convey voice messages live recorded in several languages, as well as siren and any other sounds that can awake and alert a populace in case of civil emergencies. Many of these devices are remotely controlled by public safety officials. They're mounted high above street level. They have solar batteries that will continue to work in emergencies. They do not rely on PG&E. They will provide information and instructions for residents when the only other thing working is your transistor radio. They are used all over the world. Mill Valley has them. Berkeley and Oakland are strongly considering them. There's already maps for those towns about where they can get them. We live in the most dangerous zip code in the Bay Area in an evacuation. Kensington cannot afford not to invest in this potentially life-saving system. In my view, this would cost about half the price of an average house, and actually far less. And so we are not unanimous, and I really, really want to hear from Larry, because he has contrary views on this based on his long experience as a firefighter with very different kinds of devices. But I think, and you can canvass the members of the EPC, that most of us think that the board should encourage us to investigate this farther.
As the chair of the meeting, I just want to clarify, you used the word proposal, but this is not agendized as an action item. It's agendized as a discussion item, so there is no vote that we can take tonight. So I'm going to go in the usual order and take comment from the board members. Don.
We did talk about an alarm system a month, a year or more. And I remember that Michael had mentioned that they were difficult and most committees are not doing it. Now, he may well have changed his mind, but I think there's a lot more to learn before I go very far on this.
Thank you, Don. Janice.
I think we have discussed it before, and Michael talked about the difficulty of getting community buy-in. There's no price tag on this, which concerns me. And I would also like to know how the sirens relate to our topography, given the hills and the canyons. So I would like a lot more information on this before I would be willing to go ahead and continue.
Thanks, Janice. Larry?
Yes, there actually is a price tag. It's just not in this motion, but the price tag that's in the minutes of the Emergency Preparation Committee is that three sirens would cost $379,000.
Each or total?
Total.
And the annual maintenance
is something on the order of $5,000 to $10,000 per year.
Per siren or total?
I think that's per year, per total.
For all three.
Yeah. Now I guess my take on this, and I would love to hear Chief Pagoni's take as well, but I have not encountered that many people in the fire service that believe in sirens or other warning services. The big problem with the sirens or the public address system is that the time we need them the most would be in the time of a Diablo wind event. And the last Diablo wind event I was in, which was last year, was winds in Kensington of 40 to 50 miles an hour The wind was absolutely howling. There's no way I could have heard any kind of a speaker at that point. And in fact, the one vendor we talked to said that, well, if we really needed to hear them in a windstorm, then maybe he'd think about putting in 9 sirens. Well, that's great, except you need to double the or triple the price tag. Yeah. Until I hear, even the chief from Mill Valley didn't seem to be that enthusiastic about these sirens. So until I hear from people in the fire service that think this is really an effective way and worth $400,000, I think we can spend that money better in other ways. Thank you.
Thank you, Larry. Kevin, do you have any brief comment to follow your introduction?
Well, I could just say that topography is covered by this. I don't know, I mean, if fire people agree or don't agree, it would be a question of the system under consideration. I think people should understand that if there's a prolonged power outage, there will be no way for most residents to be informed whatsoever if a fire comes up the hill from Tilden Park. And I mean, people say education doesn't cost, it pays. And I think that you can talk about price tags, but really it's nothing compared to the possibility of saving even one life.
Okay, I have a few comments. Some of them are content-based with respect to sirens, and some of them are process-based with respect to what the Emergency Preparedness Committee has been doing and what I believe to be the appropriate way for this board to proceed if sirens and public address systems are of interest to the board as a whole. So content-based, I had a conversation with Chief Pagoni and we'll give him a chance to make some comments. I do remember quite vividly his presentation about sirens in December 2018, which was my first meeting as a board member. And I thought it was very comprehensive. I just have an anecdotal something to relate. It's just anecdotal. But I was speaking with a woman who with her husband and her small daughter live in Moraga. She happened to mention to me that she had to evacuate last summer or last fall. And I don't remember the name of the fire, but I said, how did you know that you needed to go? And she said, because there was a car outside my house with a bullhorn yelling at the neighbors through the bullhorn to get out of the house. And she said, it was so ironic because I happened to be awake and I looked out the window and I saw the flames. But she said, my next door neighbor is one of the biggest, most active CERT volunteers in Moraga. And she slept through the whole thing. So she said, my husband and I, we went over, we woke up the neighbors on both sides and said, get out of bed. You need to leave your house. And this is a car, a volunteer presumably, with a loudspeaker on the street in front of their house. And sleeping people cannot hear it. So this is just my anecdotal way of saying that this is a very complex issue. And I do remember Chief Pagoni telling us that sirens are generally designed to be heard by people who are outside when they go off. They're not necessarily designed to be heard by sleeping people. And I've been actually talking to a number of my neighbors who have our elderly and have trouble sleeping. And they say, I put headphones in, I run my fans, my ears ring, I've got all kinds of stuff going on. And it's like, what I do is try to shelter, you know, buzz all this noise in my head so I don't hear anything. So I just think that this is a very complex acoustical issue. From a process standpoint, you know, if the board as a governing body were to decide to pursue this, my opinion and based on my experience is that we would follow the government code, pursue a formal process, perhaps start with a request for information where we go out to a number of, we put a broad solicitation out there and we ask the siren companies to respond, to give us information about what this would look like for Kensington. I understand that the committee says that one of the committee members has been calling around these companies and nobody calls that committee member back. I suspect that for good reason, those companies don't want to be accused of violating the California Procurement Code and responding to an informal solicitation. There is a fair procurement way to do this. And every single member of our Emergency Preparedness Committee was given a letter by our attorney, which explained the California Public Records Act and a number of other aspects of serving as a member on a standing committee, which is a legislative body in the state of California, and fair processes in procurement was specifically called out by our attorney. So I'm not coming down either way about sirens, but if this board is going to pursue it, then it, in my opinion, it has to be done through the general manager using a formal governmentally accepted process to keep us out of all kinds of trouble. All right. I have two hands up in the public, but Chief Pagani, do you have anything you'd like to add?
Well, I won't touch on as far as the legal part. I do believe we're talking from what we were talking about back in early or late 18, early 19. most of the stuff that I was talking about then was just strictly sirens. I believe what the Emergency Preparedness Committee here, while they are capable of making a siren sound, I believe they're talking about LRADs, long range acoustical devices, because they're talking about it being a PA with the voice. Again, it is just like with the sirens and the LRAD manufacturers. When I've been at conferences, will tell you the same thing. You know, they are extremely loud during, you know, people outside. You know, they are a decent tool. You know, the issues that we had with the sirens, if we were just strictly talking sirens, is the fact that this county's, I don't know, you want to call it protocol training, their belief, when they hear sirens, it's shelter in place, because pretty much all the sirens are used around the refineries. And when you hear them, it's to go inside, shelter in place, turn your TV on, and, you know, wait for further instructions as to what's going on at the refinery. You know, these LRADs, while they can make the siren sound, we would still face the same issue if we're using it as a siren. Looking at a map, if they've judged that you need three, and I'm not saying that's not enough. Typically, I'm sure the LRAD people do the same thing. As with the siren, they typically like to come out with portable ones and do testing, you know, and see what sort of attenuation they're getting with, you know, the trees, topography, and figure out the sound. But, you know, they will tell you that, you know, it's good up to X amount, you know, half mile, you know, X amount of feet. But what they're saying there is what they call effective range is kind of like gets down to like just normal talking. And as your friend talked about in Moraga or Arinda, wherever it was at, you know, even super loud in the front, in your front yard or in front of your house, middle of the night, you know, a lot of people are not going to wake up, you know, whether they're, you know, it's just the fact you have well-built homes, double pane glass, whatever the reason being. But again, what they're talking about now is something different than the original, because the original, we were just talking about, you know, sophisticated air raid sirens. This, we are talking, you know, speakers, PAs, but, you know, you're still going to face the same issue of how many people are going to hear it. So, you know, if you're better, if that is the direction the board wants to go, it's going to cost a little bit of money, but to make sure the system works, you know, you're probably, your best bet is to do an RFP for the testing and have a company, because it wouldn't really matter what company you go with, you know, sound is sound, and you know how crisp their siren, their speakers are, they're pretty much very close to it. And to do the tests and make sure that three is enough, or maybe you need four, maybe you only need two, you know, who knows with it. But it is affected, sound is affected by wind. As Larry talked about, you know, a 30, 40 mile an hour wind, it is going to blow the sound away for it. So, but anyway, that's about it. But I just want to make it clear that, you know, this is something a little different than originally talked about.
Thank you. All right. And we've got, you know, I've got 3 minutes and 38 seconds on my 20 minute timer, which is board policy. So we've got three hands in the public raised, and I don't know what order they were raised. So I'm just going to go to Gail Feldman first. But her hand went down. Now it's up. Gail, quickly, do you want to say anything?
I'm unmuted, right? Okay. Yeah, I've been following this issue for the last couple of years, and I've appreciated the work that Chief Pagoni has put into explaining, you know, his understanding of the different options and what might work and what might not work. I do believe that, you know, no matter what, we need to have multiple systems for alerting people. I am actually in favor of a siren system. I hear the siren that goes off, the test siren in Richmond that goes off every month, whether I'm inside or outside my house. I can't speak to, you know, what happens when people are sleeping. Some people are heavy sleepers, so this is always going to be an issue. But I am thinking that we do need to have a siren system up here, and so I'd throw it back at your board to do an RFP to see what the costs are going to be, what the, you know, probability of having a successful system might be up here, where it would have to be located, and then coming back and maybe talking about that. I mean, obviously it's going to cost a lot of money, and so it is a big decision to make, but I do think it would be valuable, and also maybe in combination with these radios or some, you know, other options. But I do support us continuing to look at this option. Thank you.
Thank you, Gail. I'm just going down the order that shows on my screen, Paul and Vita Doro. Hand is raised. Are they unmuted? I can't.
Yeah, I think I'm unmuted now, Julie. Thank you very much. Just a couple of quick points. It's clear from everything that's been discussed and just our own common knowledge that we need belt and suspenders here. There is no one communications medium that's going to reach everybody. So we want to have as many ways to reach people as we can possibly have. Number two, friends who live in the Midwest and are subject to very, very short notice tornado warnings. I'm convinced that whether you, sirens or LRADs or some means of communicating that it's coming and it's right over the hill now, get out, is a very important thing to have in our quiver. Yeah, it's not going to reach everybody, but if we do two, three, or four different ways of approaching this, the odds are that we're going to reach the maximum number of people. So I would strongly support the board moving forward to investigate this. And if an RFP is the right way to proceed, go for it. Thank you.
All right, thank you. We have one more comment. Danielle Madugo, technically 14 seconds, but see what you can do for us. And I think I'm on. Yeah, go for it.
Okay. A couple comments. I agree with, I echo all the other comments that I just heard from the public. And also, I hear the sirens from Richmond and Berkeley every month. And there are other uses for sirens other than fire warnings. Earthquake early warning uses sirens. Mexico uses sirens for early earthquake warning, where if they're expecting an earthquake, people can either get out from, they can hunker down and get safe. They can remove themselves from an unsafe position or building, and they oftentimes will evacuate buildings, which isn't necessarily the safest thing. But there are other uses for sirens. Earthquake early warning is one of them. I remember one of the presentations, I think there is software. The siren company has the sirens plus their software that goes with it. That software can open the fire station fire doors in advance of shaking. So in case, especially if for our fire station, which is very close to the vault, you can open the door prior to shaking and maybe it getting stuck or dislodged or whatever. So it will help. There are more uses just in the for the sirens. There's also programs and code that can aid in other uses. Thanks.
Okay, thank you very much, Danielle. So we have now finished that. This was not an action item. We have actually now finished the September 9th regular meeting, and we need to move on to new business for this meeting. And I think there's a couple things that are important for us to take care of. And then we also, I think, understand that we need to adjourn this meeting, and so that we don't have the confusion that we had the last time, we need to pick a date and time to adjourn it to so that it's clear. So I'm gonna take a gamble here and go for the consent calendar and see if we can get that finished in 6 minutes or less to give us enough time to work on our motion to adjourn, or on the off chance someone's willing to extend the meeting past 10. So the consent calendar is item 8. Items 8.1 from 8.4 are listed below: incident activity report, monthly financial report, monthly transmittal, and adoption of resolution 2018 approving amendments to policy 8 checking account. Any member of the board or the public can remove an item from the consent calendar for discussion by the full board. So do I have any motions regarding the consent calendar from the board? Yes, Janice.
I'd like to remove item 8.2 and 8.4.
Okay, hang on, got that. Anybody else? Oh. All right then, and I don't see any hands raised in the public,
I would like to make
move the balance of the consent calendar, except items 8.2 and 8.4, so I would move the adoption of 8.1 and 8.3.
Thank you, Janice. Do I have a second?
I'll second that motion.
Okay, and since this is consent, let's vote. Hope I'm doing this right. I'm in favor of approving 8.1 and 8.3.
Adopting, not opposing.
Yeah, sorry. Sorry.
Yeah.
Kevin.
Yes.
Don.
I stepped out for a second.
We're on the consent calendar. Janice?
Oh, that's right. I saw that before I got up.
Yeah, Janice told.
I have no comments.
Are you going to vote?
Vote.
So the motion on the table is to adopt the consent. 8.2
I vote to accept the consensus. Yeah.
Thank you. Okay. So now I've lost track of where we are. So I think Janice, you're the next vote.
I vote aye on 8.1 and 8.3.
Yeah. And Larry?
I vote yes on 8.1 and 8.3.
Okay. So as far as I know, that 8.1 and 8.3 have been adopted, which is a good thing because that includes the monthly transmittal report. And we will be discussing when we reconvene the monthly financial report and the policy change.
Could I just note one reason why I pulled 8.2?
Sure.
I think it's nonsensical. If you look at the top of the page, it credits all of the property taxes for the year as paid in advance, but we didn't get the special taxes or any other tax income. There's an inconsistency there, so it needs to be straightened out.
Yeah. Well, I think that the Brown Act allows you to send a one-way communication to Mary about your concerns.
Okay.
I just think
it's nonsensical. It's inconsistent.
Okay, so folks, we have 4 minutes left. We can either be looking at a motion to extend the meeting, or we can be looking at a motion to adjourn the meeting to a date that I would say is tomorrow at 7 p.m. Does anyone want to put something forward?
I would propose.
I make a motion that we adjourn the meeting until tomorrow, October the 15th at 7 p.m.
Second.
All right. Board member discussion? All right. Public comment on that? Hope everybody gets what we're doing. We'll pick up on the consent calendar. We'll pick up on the agenda. We'll probably have to go back into closed session. It's just like taking a long lunch break. So, all right then. Seeing no public comment, I vote in favor. Kevin?
Yes.
Don?
Yes.
Janice?
Aye.
Larry?
Yes.
All right. So the motion to adjourn this meeting until tomorrow at 7 p.m. is passed. Mary and I will scramble to get all the appropriate postings done. And stay tuned until tomorrow at 7 p.m. Thank you.
I have just one request, and that is, could I ask Mary to review the yearly financial report, item 8.2? To make sure that she's convinced it's correct, because I almost had a heart attack reading it.
Yes.
Our revenue is off by $600,000 in the wrong way, and there's something screwball about our lease with El Cerrito as well. So.
You mean the contract with El Cerrito?
The contract with El Cerrito. We only paid $400,000 out of $1.3 million. I doubt seriously El Cerrito gave us $900,000.
Yeah, okay. Well, you know, Mary, you could register those questions and see what you may have time to do within the short time that we'll all be seeing each other again.
Will do.
Okay, thanks everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks.